Welcome to episode 3 of Criterion Shortcuts. This is actually the first shortcut where we have a guest. And yes, we have a guest this time. We're positive about that. We're joined by Dave Eves. Dave, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
We've been kind of talking on Twitter for, I don't know, months, years, decades?
Something in there. Centuries.
Dave is a funny guy. He has a good taste in film. I know you've been listening to the podcast. And I know you started a blog recently. Do you want to talk about that?
I wish I could, but I have been bad and haven't put in a first entry yet. So when I have gotten that going, I would love to talk about it.
Sweet. Well, next time you're here, you can talk about it. And maybe this will be your first entry, saying, hey, I'm on this podcast.
Hey, that would be great. With all of my zero followers, I'm sure it would really help this episode out.
I'll be hitting the refresh button on our traffic just to see the boost.
Excellent.
But we will put the link to Dave's blog in the show notes, so maybe he'll get more than zero followers, maybe two or three.
Excellent.
With the first-time guest, we usually ask you about your Criterion connection. So do you want to talk about how you got into Criterions?
Sure. I have been collecting Criterions for like 10 years. The first one I got, I didn't even realize it was a Criterion. It was the DVD of The Royal Tenenbaums. That was probably a lot of people's first Criterion.
Yes.
but my first Criterion where I knew it was Criterion was a box set of DVDs of Akira Kurosawa films. Four samurai movies. It had Seven Samurai, Hidden Fortress, Yojimbo, and Sanjuro.
Good ones, yeah.
I found it at a video store. I didn't really know much about it other than Star Wars was based off the Hidden Fortress. And I'm a huge Star Wars fan, so
sure.
I thought I need to get this. I didn't understand what it was. I asked my dad, who doesn't even really like movies. He knew what Criterion was. I found out later that he has a hidden collection of Ingmar Bergman films, so that's how
nice.
He knew.
Nice, okay. Yeah, good way to go, Pops.
So I picked that up, and ever since I've been buying them, and I guess like 4 years ago I got really into it with Blu-rays, and it's become a crippling addiction ever since.
Darn. I do not feel your pain whatsoever. So roughly what's the number in your collection approximately?
Of just Blu-rays, I only had a couple DVDs, but Blu-rays I just passed 200.
Okay, yeah, that's...
Which a decent sized collection.
That's an investment. Yeah, that'll put a dent in your bank account.
Yep, and with the sale coming up, it's only going to get worse.
Better.
Yes, better. Correct.
Well, we're here actually to talk about Night in the City, and it's a great way to kick off Noirvember. Our first noir film on the cast, actually.
Unless you want to count Mulholland Drive as neo-noir.
Yeah, and I'm picking my brain to think of anything else. I'm probably going to get corrected saying, oh, you did this, but no, I don't think.
I won't be correcting you because I can't think of anything else you've done that would have been noir.
This is noir. Welcome to Noir Close-Up. And I think this is a good first noir film. It's Night in the City, Jules Dassin. Jules Dassin was actually pretty prolific in the post-war period with noir films. There are really, I think, four notable ones, beginning with Brute Force, and he did, Thieves Highway, of course, Night in the City, I'm forgetting one.
Naked City?
Naked City, a big one. a lot of people think that's where he hit his stride as far as a Hollywood director, and I'd agree. That was a pretty productive and high quality period. And then he was leftist, and he got blacklisted. Oops. So he went out of work for a few years, and then came back in '55 and did Rafifi, which is have you seen Rafifi?
I love Rafifi.
Rafifi
was the first Jules Dassin movie I saw. So when Night in the City came out, I had to get it.
Mine too. And it's kind of curious to see these noirs, to see where it became a noir in the French, almost Jean-Pierre Melville style, French style. So really interesting career progression, you could say.
Yeah.
But this is a pretty dark noir. It's Criterion Spine number 274. It stars good old Richard Widmark. I always want to say Widmark because I do so many German films, but it's...
It seems like a German name.
he probably has German ancestry. I didn't look that up. It also has Gene Tierney. It has a number of big supporting cast. Not many big names, I would say, but I think the supporting actors really did shine here. I'll just mention Googie Withers, Hugh Marlowe, Francis L. Sullivan, Herbert Lom, Stanislaw Zbysko. As we established on last episode, I struggle with those Polish names.
I'm glad you took that one.
And that's Gregorius, I believe. And yes. Mike Mazurki. So it was written by, it was based on the novel by Gerald Kirsch, which was a pretty harsh novel, and this is the noir treatment. So this is a dark tale about a gentleman in London, Harry Fabian, who we think is American. He's played by Richard Widmark, and he's, would you say, scoundrel, riffraff, hustler, all of the above?
Yeah, he might have been a good guy at some point, but his pursuit of trying to be a big shot turned him to the dark side, I'd say.
There you go, Star Wars.
No, there we go.
He's Noir Vader.
Noir Vader.
Yeah, so he is a two-bit hustler. He works as a club, what do they call it, club promoter, really trying to get tourists to come to this club, which is kind of borderline ill repute, and get them to spend lots of money. But he's an opportunist. He's always trying to, he's always working on a scheme. He's a charmer. A good character, I think. Would you agree?
I would agree. I think he's a great character. Even though you know he's trying to, maybe his intentions aren't the best, you kind of are rooting for him just because he wants it so much. Mm-hmm. And he's resourceful, and you like to see his scheming ways and how he can manipulate people.
Yeah, we'll delve into Widmark's performance and character and Fabian's character for sure. He's really, I think, among many highlights. But the big thing is he finds his break is with wrestling, the world of professional wrestling, and he finds a wrestler in actually not Gregorius the Great, but Nicholas
of Athens.
Nicholas of Athens, yes. A good, actually not a great wrestling name, but
no,
I like Gregorius the Great a lot better, or the Strangler.
The Strangler.
Yeah, that's pretty. In fact, I'm scared of the Strangler.
And I think it shows the kind of choices that Fabian makes, that he's in business with a man named the Strangler. I think it shows that maybe he's made some poor choices along the way.
Yeah, well, he's not in business. Well, I guess he does get in business with the Strangler, but it begins with Gregorius and Nick. So with Shortcuts, we don't, you know, we prepare a little more for the close-up episodes, but this is more of a conversation. So why don't we start with Harry? So Harry, I would say he's kind of a multifaceted character. He's, you know, like you said, we like to root for him. He kind of has a naivety that's easy to get behind. He gets pushed around. You can tell he wants it so bad.
And you can tell that he's been at it for a while as well.
And he's struggling too.
Yeah. And he's pretty much at the point that we meet him in the story, pretty much everyone else in town has figured him out.
Yes.
He's probably not as smart as he thinks he is. And this is his last big chance to really make it. If this doesn't work, who knows where he's going to end up after this.
He's definitely not as smart. And in fact, you're right. Everybody in town, and this is London, by the way, everybody in town has figured him out. And most people, he's so tenacious that he actually does reach a bit of success. And most people, you know, see right through it. They kind of see that, you know, things aren't going to go, excuse me, things aren't going to work out too well for him. And, you know, I'm not going to, this one, I think we should stay spoiler free. Do you agree?
No, I agree. This is such a good movie, and I think we can talk about it without going too much into what happens, without spoiling it, and still have a good discussion about it.
Yeah, I
agree.
One thing I noticed about Harry is he's also very thin skinned too, and he's really sensitive, and you see that in Widmark's face. A lot of great reaction shots, and maybe we should start with some clips here. We did pull a couple. Let's start with when. Well, first let's show Harry in action, and how he can, he is good at what he does. You know, we see him early, he's good at getting people in the club, I'm going to play two clips here that show how he kind of pins down, funny choice of words, Gregorius the Great here. So here we're going to, this is what he overhears Gregorius saying in the club.
Papa, please, where are you going?
Is it for this you brought me from Athens? The circus? What have you done to wrestling? Do you think I permit Nicholas to wrestle with such filth?
Nah. Take it easy, old boy. Take it easy.
You do not talk like that to my father. Get out.
And now, then he sneaks around the side of the building, and this is how he connects with Gregorius. And this one's a little longer clip.
See here, I demand my money. How dare you call this filthy exhibition wrestling?
I beg your pardon?
I demand my money back, do you hear me?
Easy on, easy on. Where's your ticket?
It's right here. Disgusting. I've never witnessed such a spectacle.
No. No, it can't be. You're not Gregorius. Gregorius the Great.
You see, Nicholas? There are people who do not forget great wrestling.
Forget the greatest wrestler the world has ever known? I was just a kid, but how can one ever forget your glorious struggle with the,
Heiterschmidt?
Heiterschmidt, yes, of course, Heiterschmidt.
I thank you, young man.
I thank you, sir.
My name is Harry Fabian.
This is Nicholas.
A fine-looking lad. Thanks.
Do you suppose you could, pin a man like the, Strangler, say?
Yes.
Oh.
Strangler? Nicholas pinned 10 stranglers, all in same ring, same time.
Well, yes, I should think he could. I would consider it a great honor, sir, if you and Nicholas would have a drink with me.
Mr. Fabian, you fine young man, I like you.
We'll drink to your great contemporary, Heiterschmidt.
Young man, you are too charming. Very well, young man.
Fine.
So, yeah, we see he's dogged in his pursuit. He, and persuasive, you know, I if I were Gregorius, I would fall for his charms as well. You know, he really just said what the man wanted to hear about wrestling.
He's an expert manipulator in that sense.
He's enterprising.
Yes, yes. Almost to the point that it's surprising that he's failed as many times as he has in the past. Mm-hmm.
Well, and he is charming, too, and he does charm Gregorius, but I think that he's over-charming. And,
yes.
And Gregorius, you know, maybe he's a wrestler. In the supplements, they revealed that the actor was actually pretty intelligent, but most bulky wrestlers are not thought of to be the sharpest tools, and maybe it speaks for maybe the wrestlers being kind of blockheads that he falls under his scheme. So, and that's the... Go ahead.
I would say that Gregorius, he seems like the type of person that wants to see the best in people. He believes in tradition.
Yes.
I would say that it's almost not so much that he's not smart enough. It's more so that he's so good-natured that he's not used to the wily ways of people like Fabian. So he can easily be manipulated by that.
It's a world that he just can't see. You're right, he's stubborn, but he's also he has his principles. In fact, I thought Gregorius was a fascinating character.
I think he was the best character and the best actor in the movie. Actually,
I do too. Yeah, and the actor did not do. He was a real wrestler, and in the commentary they fleshed this out. I didn't know much about him, but he had been a pretty successful wrestler. But this was his only film, and that's unfortunate because there aren't a lot of roles for wrestlers,
No.
I think Primo Carnera did a few, although he's a boxer. Well, some would argue against that, but so he uses Gregorius, and but of course, in order to launch his enterprise and in order to get into the wrestling business, he can't do it with his he doesn't have the capital, and he. And as you said, the town doesn't trust him, so he has to get other people to support him. And who is that other person?
Phil Noceros. Another great, great supporting role.
Right, and we talked about the wrestler, about Gregorius. You know, Phil is also a big person, but not in the same, he's not a bulky, muscular person. He's just an obese person.
A portly gentleman.
He has a large presence. And
yes.
And actually, not just his physically, but I think his performance, he postures as a intimidating and tough guy to deal with. And do you think we should play the other clip? We only pulled two, so.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, Harry goes to try to get some money to launch this new business, and he asks Phil, who is married to Helen, and they run this nightclub of, as I mentioned, borderline ill repute. I think ultimately it is probably prostitution, but they can't show that in the code era. But instead they use they're fake beggars and that sort of thing. But he asks Phil, who has the money, for an investment, and Phil's probably heard this before, this line, that, hey, I have a big thing cooking. I just need 200 quid, 400 quid, and we'll be rich.
I think his reaction to Harry approaching him shows just how many times he's heard it before.
So let's play that reaction.
Yes, I do have need of humor, don't I?
Phil! Phil! I've hit it. Hundreds, thousands of fortune, Fabian promotions. I've hit it, Phil.
Now, what's all this?
Wrestling. All in wrestling.
Hey.
Phil, I hold here in the palm of my hand the means to control wrestling in all London.
Control wrestling?
In all London.
You?
Me.
Dear fellow, have you ever heard of a citizen called Christo?
You know what I got in here, Phil? Huh? Christo! Oh, no, Phil, you don't understand. I've got Christo where I want him. Gregorius, see, I've got Gregorius.
Oh, dear boy, you'll be the death
Listen,
of me.
Listen, Phil, hear me out. I've got Christo stopped. Gregorius, Christo's his son, don't you see? Gregorius will protect me from Christo, Phil, see? I only need a few hundred. Listen to me. You give me 400, I'll make you a rich man.
Make me a rich man.
Throw him out!
Oh, no. Must be unkind to the dear boy. I have laughed so much. Did you?
You big businessman, Mr. Financial Wizard. Do you know what it means to earn 400 quid? Let me see you get it. Get 300. 200. Yes, why don't you get 200 of your own and put it on that desk? My husband will match it, right, Phil?
That's right. Put 200 in.
All right, I'll get it. Twice, three times 400, now fling it in your face. Go on, laugh. Shake yourself to pieces. I'll show you.
Not a lot of respect from Phil and even Helen to Harry. And as you see, even drops from 400 to 200 if they'll match it, and of course that comes into play later. But what you can't see in that clip, this being an audio podcast, is the look on Harry's face when he hears that laughing. That's where he's so deflated, and that's I wouldn't say Widmark was a tremendous actor, but he was really good with faces. And
yes, he's very expressionistic.
Yes, good word. So, and another thing, nobody's trustworthy. Nobody. Well, actually, I'd say Gregorius is trustworthy. I'd say Gregorius may be the most honest, and maybe Nick, and maybe even, well, no, not the Strangler for sure.
No, definitely not the Strangler. Mary is trustworthy. Mary being Harry's
Tierney.
Old flame.
Yes, she is, but, she doesn't get, she does get involved, but this actually came up on the commentary too. It really was not a very juicy role for Tierney, the level of an actress she was.
No, her part. Sorry to completely go off on a tangent to do it to Mary, but her part is the only purpose it serves is to kind of give Harry some sort of redeemable backstory. I feel like, and even so, she's supposed to be this kind of like virginal, good woman, but yet she still works in Phil's club, mm-hmm. which I find is very interesting.
Right.
And her character didn't exist in the source novel, which I found...
I missed that.
I think they took pieces of other characters and blended that in to make Mary.
Okay.
But that doesn't surprise me very much, considering that she kind of disappears for huge chunks of the movie.
very huge chunks. And in fact, you kind of forget about her until she comes
back again.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Jean Tierney. I think it might be that, well, first, I think they needed to have somebody that is really on Harry's side.
Yeah. And I think she does serve to humanize him.
Yes. Yes. She's his conscience, sort of.
Yeah.
I think it's also, it's not unfair to say that, you know, probably somebody wanted to put Jean Tierney's name on the credits, and you know, she is a second build, even though I would say, as far as character depth, she's probably fifth or sixth.
At least, or at most, I'd say.
And so, let's talk about the supporting characters. We mentioned Phil and Helen. We didn't really go into Helen, but Helen is Phil's wife, and she's just as conniving, and if not more so.
She would be the closest approximation to the femme fatale of this noir, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. And she actually kind of takes both Phil and Harry for a ride. She's kind of the puppet master in a way, pulling the strings of both of them, manipulating them. And there are others. There was Christo is the mob boss, and you know, he not a lot of dimension there, but good mob boss, you know.
And it's interesting to note that he is Gregorius' son, which adds that extra level of tension and kind of hinges on Harry's plan to try to manipulate Christo by using his father.
Yeah, actually, I don't think it's really a inconvenient or a poor writing to put that. I think it establishes conflict very, very well. So there's also, there's Adam. He doesn't really have a lot to do.
He burns spaghetti.
He does.
He's talented at burning something that's submerged in water.
The guy cannot cook. Yeah.
Not to save his life.
It's got to be ramen for you, Adam. Sorry. And that's really all he gets to do. There's the flower lady. There's the lady on the boat. Do you remember her name?
Oh, geez. I do not remember her name.
Darn. Yeah, I don't remember her name either. But she doesn't have a big role. Actually, well, she kind of does in a way, but I'd say really all the supporting performances are really spectacular.
Yes.
And we mentioned Christo. Christo does not play the stereotypical gangster. You know, he's a little more humanized, even if...
He is.
And maybe that's because of Gregorius or the relation.
I think it's interesting to note that in a movie like this, I don't want to say it's convoluted, but there's a lot going on, and all of these supporting characters have something they want. They all have weaknesses, and it all really just creates this web that everyone's trapped in, and that's expert writing.
It's very well written, yeah, and I think it should be mentioned that this was and we'll get into the blacklisting too, but it was written during a time when, the screenwriter, Joe Eisinger, had not read, and neither had Dastan, had not read the Kirsch novel. So they, I'm sorry. The screenwriter had read it, but Dastan had not. And Kirsch was not crazy about it. But from what I understand, the novel was a lot worse than the film, seedier. I don't think you could film the novel as written.
Not back then. I think you could probably get away with it today.
Yeah, I think it would be a good movie. Maybe, well, no, I don't want. I'm not going to encourage somebody to remake Night in the City, but that type of story. So yeah, and you know, I there's also fighting. I don't mean just in the literal sense, but there is figurative fighting too. There's conflict between Phil and Helen. There's conflict between Phil and Harry. There's conflict between Christo and Harry. There's Gregorius versus the Strangler, which is both. And Nick versus the Strangler, which is both physical and, I guess...
Literal and figuratively?
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, it all culminates in a pretty intense matchup towards the end, and a wrestling match, which I think that's probably one of my favorite sequences in the movie.
Yes.
And I don't think it's a spoiler to say that it is between Gregorius and the Strangler. And Gregorius is the father of Nick... Is that right?
Father of Christo. I thought he was Nicholas's father the first time I watched it. The second time I watched it, I realized that there was no relation
between them. It is convoluted. He's the mentor of Nick. He's trying to get him into the world of wrestling. And he has a lot of faith. Again, that maybe the naivety. I don't think Nick would have beat the Strangler.
No, probably not. I think it's important to mention that the Strangler, this tough wrestler... uses a new style that's all rough and tumble and
right.
Like no holds bar. But Gregorius is championing the Greco-Roman style, which is like just using upper body strength.
Yep.
And so even in there, it's that match between tradition and the seedy, dastardly world of what you could say is modern then.
Sure.
And yeah. I think that's kind of the struggle of the movie as well.
It's old versus young in a way too. And yeah. not just physical ages, but, you know, the old ways versus the new ways, tradition versus modernity, and even in wrestling. And of course, now wrestling, well, I don't think Gregorius would be too into modern wrestling.
No, he would not. The Strangler might,
yeah. But anyway, as you mentioned, Gregorius, fantastic physical acting as well as just all around. I'm with you. I think he is the best performance there. So, okay, I think we have to talk about the blacklisting. So, Dasson had just been blacklisted, and Zanuck had protected him, knew this would be his last film, and actually he'd be lucky if he'd be able to finish this because he was on the radar of the HUAC, HUAC, and so he sent him overseas to London, told him to film the expensive scenes first, and that way they couldn't shut it down, but he couldn't get back to the lot, he couldn't edit his own movie. So do you think, and obviously this is, you know, monumental, probably traumatic experience in his personal life, do you think this comes out? Do you think maybe in the character of Harry, is that a little bit of Jules?
I'm going to say yes. I think that the general principles of the movie are leftist in a sense, and that it's like this guy trying to get ahead in a capitalistic society that's beating him down. I'm not going to say that it's socialist in that regard. I don't think it's that cynical, I guess. Oh, no, it's pretty cynical, but it's not on that level.
Definitely cynical, yeah, but not socialist cynical.
No. But I think that there's a lot of the struggle that Dasson was going through in his personal life present in this film, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And he clearly, granted, I've only seen two of his films. I've only seen this and Rafifi. He does not shy away from putting in his own personal opinions and personal goings-on into his films. Mm-hmm. So I think that he's not, he would put his own struggles in there.
Mm-hmm. And I think you could say that, you know, Harry is up against forces that he can't control, and he is being kept down by a system, really.
Yes.
He really cannot get into the system, no matter how charming or, as I mentioned, the word I used before, tenacious. You know, it doesn't do him a world of good, because there are people like Phil, like Christo, who are take advantage of him, take advantage of lots of people.
And we meet him at a point in his life when everyone's against him.
Yes.
Like just like Dasson, this is his last shot.
Yeah.
If this doesn't, and even if it doesn't succeed, who knows where he's going to be after this?
Yeah. Actually, probably even he couldn't predict what really happened was that he wouldn't work for 5 years.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have any allies. Maybe Mary is a composite of Daryl Zanuck.
Maybe.
Well, a loose comparison, a composite. So let's talk about the filmmaking too. It is a dark movie. Actually, in the commentary, they mentioned that it's often compared with The Third Man, and actually, I that jumped right out of me during my viewing. I noticed that Harry's running a lot, and I noticed he runs through alleyways a lot, and that brought back memories of The Third Man.
And you also get the chance to see some of the post-war rubble, which is a huge part of The Third Man.
Yeah, and also it's London. It's, you know, it's not Hollywood, not L.A., not New York. So it's overseas, and you don't see that too often in a Hollywood movie. Third Man was not a Hollywood movie, but still. So I think it's as a noir, I'd say it's pretty impressive. I'd say very dark.
Yes. And I mean, night is in the title. Most of the movie takes place at night, which I mean is a staple of noir, anyways. But you got expressionistic shadows everywhere. Something I wanted to mention, which is a great touch, in Phil's office.
Yes.
His whole office is kind of built like a cage, but there's a lot of upward imposing angles mm-hmm. on Phil, which kind of highlights just how boisterous of a personality he is and how boisterous of a physical presence he is. But those cage-like windows form a spider's web in shadows. above the on the ceiling, which just makes him seem like a spider and everyone's in his web.
Yeah, and you could say the same. I mean, you don't have the physical or filmic representation of Christo, but he's in a way, well, not a spider, but a predator. And
yes,
and there's a lot of darkness around him too. And then of course Harry, there's plenty of darkness, lots of shots with him. You know, with barely lit. There's one as he's being chased in one scene. You see him, and I think I got a screenshot of it. I'll put it up there. He's just brilliant. The whole film is brilliantly lit. Really a gorgeous looking film.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've actually covered quite a bit of it. Good discussion, Dave.
Thank you.
So, what would you rate this film?
I would give this a solid 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Okay, so you like it.
I like it quite a bit.
How would you say it ranks compared to other noirs you've seen?
I wouldn't say I'd say it's pretty high up there in terms of other noirs I've seen. I will admit that I have not seen as many noirs as I'd like to see.
Well, it's Noirvember. You can correct
it. It is Noirvember. This is the time to correct it.
Yes.
I'd rank it pretty high up there. I don't think it's quite on the level as something like The Third Man. Mm-hmm. I'd say Sweet Smell of Success is another great noir.
Oh, yes, yeah. And that one also is a product of its time.
Yes.
Have you by chance seen Pickup on South Street?
That's one of the ones that I really want to see. I'm kind of hoping for the Criterion Blu-ray to come out before I check it out, though.
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic on that one. There are a lot of parallels. Of course, Widmark, and this is a few years after, and it's a very similar role. And in fact, he's also not a very good, not a good person. He's again a two-bit hustler. This time, he's the pickup guy, a pickpocket, you could say. But there are actually quite a bit of similarities with this. There's even a boat, a houseboat, and so I'm not saying that Sam Fuller lifted anything from this. Maybe been a little bit inspired, because I think both work standalone. Pickup has a lot of great supporting characters too. So I think people that like Night in the City would like Pickup, and not in a way that it's not like a copycat. So anyway, I'm with you. I give it an 8. I think it's a solid noir. Not the best noir out there, but Third Man is, I think, pretty much the benchmark. Maybe Sunset Boulevard, I guess you call that.
Oh, I love Sunset Boulevard. I just, Billy Wilder in general is just great. Double Indemnity.
Oh, yeah. A lot of good noirs. And I like even a lot of the Fritz Lang noirs. There's just so many good noirs. We could do a whole, maybe we will do a whole noir episode. So I'd give it an 8. And did you get a chance to watch the supplements?
I watched a good deal of them. I watched the commentary. I watched the interview with Jules Dassin, who is... always fascinating to watch, and it's great to actually hear the director speak on the film, considering that it's 60 mm-hmm. years old. And I watched the feature examining the two different versions. I did not get a chance to watch the British version. Did you watch the British version?
I liked that feature was there because, and for those who don't know, there was a American and a British version created because of, if you know anything about the Marshall Plan, it kind of stifled the UK post-war economy, and they had to maximize profits, so they had to create a version that would be released only in the UK, where they would not have made any money if it was from the American release. So, I thought that said enough, and I think that the American version probably is the better version.
Watching the clips, like the introduction to Harry in the British version is completely different. It was the first thing the first version they filmed, and they refilmed it. And I think the second, the American introduction is so much better.
Oh yes, and also there's more Adam, you know, the spaghetti killer.
Yeah,
I didn't need a lot more Adam. It was okay.
No, he was fine in the brief role that he had. But I think it's very interesting in the British version. The scheme that he's cooked up is a pill to put in gasoline,
which
makes it seem like he's been duped into buying magic beans.
Yeah, it is a little out there. I think the wrestling was a little more promising for him.
Also,
there were the two scores. There was the Waxman and the... Benjamin Frankel scores. And I thought that was interesting to when they showed the same scenes, like that overhead scene where Harry's running. And, of course, the Waxman score is, you know... very, very upbeat, noir-ish, thrilling. And Frankel is too, but it's more subdued. and it starts softer. I think the highs are lower, so I think maybe less Hollywood, more, you know, if you've seen like Odd Man Out, have you seen that?
I have seen that, actually.
Yeah, kind of a somber score for a noir movie. Of course, yeah. I wouldn't compare these two. And yeah, you mentioned Dassin. Actually, there are two interviews with Dassin, and I liked them both, but I really, really liked the French TV show. That was L'Imité du Dimanche.
I hadn't watched that one yet. I'll have to check that one out.
It's a good one. It was actually recorded in 1970, so there was a little bit of hindsight for him to look on his career. And a lot of it is Hollywood stories. It's not just about Night in the City. He tells some stories about Joan Crawford, really good stories about Joan Crawford, and how she refused to to let him use the word cut. But he's a director, so they had to work something out to where he would, I think, touch his face, and she would know that means cut if something's not working. Yeah, maybe a diva. And there's Selznick, Conrad Veidt, a lot of stories about a lot of different people. There's horses. But he did, what I found the most fascinating is he did talk about The Blacklist, and he was actually pretty candid about it towards the end of the interview. What really struck me is he talked about Kazan. And the interviewer, I think, kind of baited him a little bit, and he quoted Kazan. For people that don't know, Kazan named names, did not get blacklisted. Dassin did get blacklisted. What was interesting is Dassin grew up with Kazan and knew him as a youngster. So, and they'd been friends, but and in fact, I wrote down this quote: "He was a man lost without his work," and Dassin seems to. I don't think they were friends at that time. I think he said he compromised his morals or his integrity for his own skin, for his own work. So
I could see that.
Yep. So did you listen to the commentary, Dave?
I did listen to the commentary. That was a very good commentary track. It's the one that was recorded for the original DVD, though.
Yeah.
Wasn't anything new.
I think everything was on the original DVD. I might not be... Totally accurate.
I don't know if the British version was included in the first DVD.
Oh, right. I don't think that was. But I think the supplements, I think everything was.
Yeah.
But it's still a pretty stacked release. And I agree. I like the commentary. It's pretty academic.
Yes.
And kind of dry, but I do like it. It gave a lot of insight into the novel, some things we brought up here.
I think that's where it stands out as the most interesting, examining all the differences between the novel, the screenplay, mm-hmm. The shooting version, and the British version. You get a lot of history into the making of the film and how it's changed over the years.
Mm-hmm. And The Blacklist, too. And that was Glenn Erickson did that commentary, so that was a good one. So on our show, and I know you've listened, we give Criterion ratings. So just on the overall package, what would you rate Night in the City?
I would say, since we get two versions of the film and the commentary, I give the package a 9.
Okay, yeah. I think that's safe. Actually, I'd go a little further because I really like when, even though I didn't watch the British version, you know, if I revisit this movie, I probably would. That's the one I would go for next, and it makes it a little more rewatchable, and I just love when they do that. So I'm actually going to give it a 9.5. I think it's good. I actually really like the cover.
The cover's great.
I don't know who drew it. I'm sure somebody will tell me, but it's an illustrated cover, and it actually, and I know we've had talks about the booklets versus the foldouts, but the foldout is actually gorgeous.
it's nice. It makes it difficult to read the essay.
Right.
I will say that.
Not functional, but
no.
But I wanted to put it on my wall. I didn't want to read it. it's more of poster kind of thing. So okay, well, this is episode 3 of Criterion Shortcuts, and Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you online, aside from this blog?
my epic blog. You can find me on Twitter at Cinema versus Dave.
And that's VS Dave.
That's VS Dave, correct.
And I'm at AWest505. You can find the show at facebook.com/CriterionCloseUp. You can email us at feedback@CriterionCloseUp.com. We are on Twitter, CriterionCU. It's a long list, Dave. Sorry.
It's okay.
And yes, we nag for iTunes reviews. If you like what you heard, please leave us a review. And that includes you, Dave.
I'm going to give this episode a really good review. I think your guest was great this time.
No, I think you have been great. And so if people like the show, please do give us reviews. Tell friends. Spread the word. If you like what we're doing, we'll keep doing it. So thanks for joining, Dave, and it's been a good discussion.